Hey everyone, this is Tom Salemi of Device Talks. Welcome back to the Device Talks Weekly Podcast. Well, this is the penultimate episode of Device Talks Weekly before our Device Talks Minnesota meeting on June 11th at the McNamara Alumni Center. We'll talk about the event with my fellow MedTech nerds, Kayleen Brown, Managing Editor of Device Talks, and Chris Newmarker, Executive Editor of Mass Device. We'll have the Newmarker's Newsmakers in just a little bit. A few pieces of housekeeping, just so you know. So once again, the event is June 11th at the McNamara Alumni Center. You can buy tickets at minnesota.devicetalks.com. Unlike our other meetings, we actually have a cap on seats to this event, and we're up against it. So if you're planning to be there or want to be there, don't miss out. Go to minnesota.devicetalks.com, register right away. Use the code DTWeekly25 to save your 25%. Little gift to our loyal podcast listeners, and you will be part of one fantastic day of MedTech conversations. We've got three tracks going on. We've got a tech track, we've got a company track, we've got an industry track, lots of networking opportunities opening up with our Women in MedTech Breakfast. If you're intending to be part of that, please register for that. Sign up for that when you do register. And be part of a great conversation that Kayleen Brown will give details on in just a little bit. So really looking forward to being back in the Twin Cities. And we will be at Target Field on Thursday, the day after, June 12th, for a noon game. And we've got a code that folks can use. We have a link that folks can use to buy tickets. And they can attend the game and sit in there, Chris and me, and hang out and network and have some fun. So I'll include that in the show notes, and we'll probably be pushing that out on LinkedIn. You need to buy those tickets before June 5th, so make sure you do that. So excited to see everyone in Minnesota. Once again, Device Talks Minnesota is happening on June 11th, single day event, and honestly, I'm just very excited, and we'll get into all of that in a little bit. Following the conversation and the Newmarker's Newsmakers, we'll run an interview I did with Cecilia Soriano. She was one of our keynotes at Device Talks Boston. She, of course, is the global president of Infusion Therapies and Technologies at Baxter. And we'll talk with her about how Baxter rebounded from the damage to their North Cove facility in North Carolina when it was hit by Hurricane Helene. So lots of lessons to be learned about crisis management, and excited to share this conversation with you. This entire episode is sponsored by our friends at Aptix, and Kayleen Brown will be leading Aptix's interview a little later in the podcast. So without any further delay, I hope you'll join us at Device Talks Minnesota, and look for the link in the show notes about the ball game. And excited to be back in the Twin Cities. It's been far too long, and I'm far too excited. I want this day to come. So we'll see you there at the McNamara Alumni Center on June 11th. Now let's get this podcast started. All right, you ready for this?
Ready.
Chris Newmarker, how are you, sir?
Doing well, Tom. Doing well. Good to be here.
Good to be here. Great to be here. We've got the entire MedTech nerd legion here. We have Kayleen Brown, our managing editor, joining us. One of the OG MedTech nerds. Woohoo!
Woohoo!
All right.
Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you on the podcast, but we're all going to be in the same building in just under 2 weeks, which is amazing. We'll be at Device Talks Minnesota on June 11th. At the McNamara Alumni Center at the University of Minnesota. So I'm excited. I think this is going to be a great, great day.
Beyond words excited. The idea of being able to dedicate an entire day just talking med tech, like if I weren't literally on stage, I'd say sign me up.
Absolutely. And the space, Chris and I, we hit it during our MedTech Nerd Tour a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago. And,
that's right.
It's a very cool space. Like
we came in on a gloomy, rainy day, but you know, you go in there, and even on a gloomy day, like you got all that light coming in from the big giant. Yeah, but
I felt like I was like walking to like Starfleet Academy. It was just like so like cool and glassy and spacious. And I don't know. It just felt smarter when I walked in the building. Like,
get out.
There are like these giant windows over the main meeting area. It's just fantastic. And, you know, like some really cool sculptures and all kinds of things. So it's going to be, it's a great space. And, you know, just, great med tech community here. And I like too. I mean, Boston has become like this just like huge, amazing show with, you know, all this energy, but it's kind of cool. We're starting up in Minnesota again, and it's going to be like a kind of a smaller group, a few hundred people, but, it's going to be nice. I think anybody here in the Twin Cities, you know, who's a med tech insider, who just wants like a good day with good networking, you know, with some, great med tech leaders here and around the country coming in. I mean, this is going to be a good event. Got to be here.
We'll talk about all the great details in a moment. A few housekeeping things. As Chris said, this is a smaller event, so we actually will have a ceiling that we're approaching. So if folks are interested in attending, don't wait, because you may not be able to get in. And also, don't wait to, if you are interested in attending, don't wait until the day or two before to register, because the price will go up. So if you know you're coming, just register now. And then you can know you're going to get in. You're going to save a little bit of money, and you're going to have a great day of MedTech. So if you're like, oh, I got to do it, well, stop. Like, stop. Push pause, register now, and then push play.
We're talking on May 30th. This is going out on May 30th today, right, Tom? So, you know, if you're listening to this, you got through this weekend to get those ticket spots. So.
Yeah, and we ain't joshing. Like, there's room for about 225 people, and we're approaching 200. So, and people always wait until last week to register.
Always.
So I think it's going to be a busy week next week. So don't get left out in the cold. I know you Minnesota people like the cold. Builds community. Is that what you said, Chris?
It is. I mean, you know, if you get some good winter clothing on, pick up like some activities like, you know, snowshoeing or cross-country skiing. But there's only so much cold you can take. You're going to feel very cold, very, very cold. Like Antarctica cold if you don't get over to this event on June 11th.
And you can use the code DTWeekly 25 to save 25% off the price of registration. So we've just saved you more money now. Like, so push pause. We'll wait. And you're back. All right.
Well, excellent. Thanks for coming back.
Okay. We'll see you.
Looking forward to seeing you.
Kayleen Brown.
Why? We got to stop because we're starting to sound like a NPR membership drive. And like, I don't know about you, but I'm driving around, I'm listening to NPR, and I start hearing to talk about.
If you register now, you can get a Chris Newmarker telephone.
tote bag. Are we going to get a tote bag?
A newsmaker's tote bag. We've got some people calling out for the MedTech Nerd Tour t-shirt. So
we haven't told you, but Tom actually plays ukulele. We have like a CD of Tom's best ukulele hits that you can get of you.
99 of his top songs.
That's right.
I would pay to see me play the ukulele. So let's talk about the programming. So we're going to do things a bit differently with this event. We're going to kind of make a little more MedTech TV show sort of thing, where we're going to have a couple of us moderating a lot of the sessions to try to not only bring in new voices, but also bring in the audience. So I think this will have a different flavor than most conferences. So I think that's another reason folks should come. But let's get into the program itself. Kayleen, you're starting the day once again with our excellent Women in MedTech breakfast. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So this will be our fourth, which feels...
Holy moly.
Right? I did the math. It took me a while. But when I got to number four, I went, wow, we're doing it. And we're doing it the right way.
It's now a thing.
It's a scene, which is super exciting. So this year, we wanted to do something different. Like what we were talking about, Minnesota is just, it's a different vibe. It's a different scene. So let's do that. So instead of doing our fireside chat, which our Device Talks Boston conference is really known for, we're going to be doing a panel discussion. So this year's theme is the power of fearless leadership in today's uncertain times. And I have to shout out two of our incredible supporters. We have Heather Hunted Page and Archana Desai, who've been helping me develop the programming this year. We realize that this topic is, it's really too big of a topic to limit ourselves. So we've pulled together an entire panel. We have different perspectives from the HR perspective, from the business leader perspective. So we have Ellie Humphrey from Patient Square Capital. We have Raven Miller from Medtronic. We have Carolyn Sleeth from Insulet. We will be talking about how do you maintain being a leader with transparency and authenticity, which is something that we talked about actually at a wrap-up podcast at Device Talks Boston, you know, how important that is. So the theme is sort of tying in together. And then this year, we're going to also do discussion breakouts, which we have found to be so very, very important and really valuable. So we are taking over, I think is really what it is. So like women in med tech and our allies. Our allies, hear us roar. We are here. Can't wait.
No, that's great.
Look at that lineup. I mean, you got some real power up there on that panel. I mean, that's going to be awesome.
Yeah, when I spoke with Ellie Scott about it, she said that lineup alone is enough to come to the conference, like just having those folks in the same room. So we're excited about that. And housekeeping, folks can register for the breakfast. It's not an additional price, but you need to sign up for it so we know how many people go into that breakfast. And there'll also be just a general networking breakfast as well. But so if you're registering and you want to be part of the Women in MedTech breakfast, make sure you designate or say as much on your registration. I really love the consistency we're sticking with encouraging people to have their voices be heard and have their authenticity be seen. This was, an important time for MedTech to step forward and show what is going on, what we're doing, the sort of the magic that's being created in the shadows. So I'm really proud of using the Device Talks media and the Device Talks meetings to kind of carry that forward. So that's a great way to start.
I loved how you had a recent LinkedIn post, Tom, where you were talking about how, you know, right now, pharma's tarnished. I mean, people just complain so much about drug prices. You know, like tech is tarnished. I mean, some of the bright stars of that area have had some PR problems lately, to say the least. But MedTech, I mean, this kind of feels like this could really be MedTech's time. MedTech is, you know, doing some just like really, you know, amazing things. And, you know, now is the time when, you know, we could really step up and have some stars in the industry. I know in Boston we had Zimmer Biomet's CEO who just their vision was just so bold and like no holds bar, we're gonna like change the world. And I feel so good because I feel like what we're doing with Device Talks and Mass Devices is furthering that as well. Like we could is it like too ambitious that we could become kind of like the TED of MedTech? I mean, come on, we can do this.
But no, I think no, we don't want to, but I don't want MedTech to get dragged down by pharma being tarnished or by tech being tarnished. I think we need to stand alone and say who we are. So, I'm glad we're contributing to that cause. So, I don't know if we want to spend this entire time going through the whole agenda, folks, and go to minnesota.devicetalks.com. Let's just pick a highlight. Chris, anything you're looking in particular forward to?
I was just going to throw in there that, I mean, I love the fact that the agenda, you know, like we're covering some of like the hottest, most exciting areas in MedTech right now, that we have like a really good panel together on IVL, you know, this cool, you know, sonic, you know, using like, you know, sonic pulses to, you know, using pulses to break up, you know, calcification and blood vessels. I mean, it's just a very exciting technology right now. And you know, we have a, you know, good amount of programming related to surgical robotics, which I mean, remains just a very exciting field. So it's gonna be great to have that there as well. So I mean, just some great programming. Oh, and just on a personal note, I mean, I did one of our episodes here, like I did an interview with the CEO of Syncardia, which is working on next generation artificial heart technology, and it's like really cool. Like we're gonna have their CEO there to, you know, talk about what they're doing with that. So.
Yeah, we'll have one room, the Heritage Gallery, dedicated to shorter sort of technology presentations. So folks who are into the tech can go there. Folks who want to hear what companies are up to can go in the Johnson Room. And then we'll have our keynote conversations, including one session on surgical robotics, one on IVL. I'll have a sit down with Rachel Ellingson from Solventum. And we'll end the day with Brooke Story of BD, talking about her experiences and helping her sister who had suffered a stroke. And Kayleen, you're leading a conversation. Yeah. with Inspire Medical Systems.
That was actually, yeah. I was going to jump in and say my highlight. So for all of the engineers out there, this is the really one of the rare opportunities where we're having the engineers who built Inspire 5's, the NeuroStim device, join us to talk about how they built it, why they built it, and how it got through the FDA process. It's kind of the dream deep dive conversation, and I get elated.
And they're such a great success story here, you know, over in the Twin Cities, the fact that, you know, now I can, you know, if I'm going shopping in the West End area, I can see their logo like on top of like a big office building over that area and be like, you know, that company's really grown. There's some real success there. So that's very cool. And Tom's having like flashbacks to us, you know, sitting in a car in the rain. Like, look, that's Inspire's logo. Like, just move on, Chris. Just keep going.
First stop on the MedTech Nerd Tour was to go see the tower. So we pull up and it's really raining. We're like, well, I was going to get out and do some video. We're both sitting there like,
no,
this is stupid.
I'm disappointed, gentlemen. I mean, your dedication.
I have a video of it from through his windshield. Does that count? Is that
we didn't want to be a Jim Cantore, you know, exactly. thing, you know, like I'm out here in front of Inspire headquarters.
We're in gusts of 900 miles an hour. So yeah,
are not dripping wet, you don't care enough.
Come on, Tom. I was going to do it, and you just like said no.
I did. I know. I was a big. I was hoping it would stop raining, but it never did. It never did.
Raining the whole time we were driving.
It was raining the whole time, and there was a lot of traffic. It didn't take us just 50 minutes to get anywhere. It was a lot more when you were a real trooper, Chris Newmarker, driving.
Orange barrel seasons back around the Twin Cities too. So yeah.
So folks can go to minnesota.devicestocks.com. We'll open up with the amazing breakfast. We'll end with a great networking reception for folks to debrief and to connect. And then on Thursday, Chris and I, we're going to be at Target Field. We'll be rooting for the Twins, and I'll be sending out a code to attendees. Folks can buy their own tickets there and join us in kind of our own little med tech section. So whether it's 5 people or 15 people or 50 people, it'll be fun just to kind of hang out and see some baseball. I hope it doesn't rain.
They've been moving up in the AL Central. So there you go. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Can they catch up with the Tigers? We'll see.
And the Red Sox have dropped 4 straight. So we're definitely heading in different directions. So, all right. Well, we hope you join us on June 11th at the McNamara Alumni Center for Device Talks, Minnesota. So we won't talk about the event. Well, we probably will mention, let's be honest. We'll drop in plugs throughout the newsmakers, but
definitely hope to see as many of our great audience there. So yeah, but let's do it. Let's do the new markers, newsmakers. So
what is number 5, Chris Newmarker?
Hey, number 5, we've got the former CEO of Nevro, Kevin Thornall. He's got a new job. He's heading over to Zimmer Biomet.
Fun fact about Kevin Thornall. Do you know a little bit of trivia? Did you know that he was our first OEM guest on Device Talks Weekly?
Get out.
No, he was.
Oh,
like episode 4 or 5. He was like the first time we got a big company to come on the podcast. He was talking about their diagnostics for COVID. So always rooting for Kevin Thornall. He was there right from the start and joining a very cool company.
Yeah, he had that exit, like getting Nevro sold to Globus Medical, but yeah, maybe we should have him on again, you know, soon to talk about what has him excited about ZB. So,
well, great news for Kevin Thornall, and of course we've talked about Ivan Tornos in his appearance at Device Talks Boston, and Chris, you wrote about his he wants Zimmer Biomet to be the most bold med tech out there. Was that his?
Device Talks Boston. He said that he plans for, Zimmer Biomet to be the boldest company in med tech. I mean, it was pretty fantastic.
Awesome. All right. Well, Kevin Thornall will certainly add to the boldness, I'm sure. He's got great experiences and looking forward to see how that develops. Let's roll on to number 4, Chris Newmarker.
Hey, number 4, this is just like an interesting piece of Wall Street gossip, which is, the Financial Times, they had an article where some anonymous sources were saying that private equity is approaching Hologic about, acquiring them. So supposedly they turned them down at first, but, they're sounds like the private equity firms are still talking to them, at least now what the Financial Times is saying.
Wow. All right. Well, it's interesting. And Blackstone was one of the firms, right? You said.
Yeah. TPG and Blackstone.
Yeah, I was thinking about Blackstone in regards to the Medtronic diabetes spinout that we talked about last week. I mean, they had a stake, and I wonder how if they're going to play a role in that spinout or not. I think that it was said that it's going to go public. The diabetes company is going to go public, but could Blackstone acquire it and just take it private? I wonder.
It's an interesting that it's a really good question. I remember when you made that on LinkedIn as well. I was like that is very 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 fascinating, and I think definitely with our reporting we're going to be looking into that work, or just at least keeping a real eye on, like, as Medtronic explains how this deal is going down, like, as what role is Blackstone going to be playing in that.
Yeah, well, then we had, just thinking about the Viscoliosi brothers buying Stryker's spine business, which takes a big part of the spine business private, which is going to be interesting to see how industry analysts sort of cover the area with one of the bigger companies now not contributing data to their model. So
yeah,
private equity is certainly making an imprint.
They've made significant investments in Medline. They've made significant investments in Henry Schein. It's always fun when we have Joe Mullings like up on the stage at Device Talks, and he's like Joe Stradamus. I mean, I think it was like a year or two ago, he's like, private equity is going to be making big moves in medtech. It's like, all right. And there it is. There we got these private equity deals.
It's always encouraging because they say, like, where the money flows, attention grows. So as long as we're getting the money in, let's get more attention and awareness and make medtech better, bigger, stronger.
I mean, at its best, I mean, some of this private equity investment could maybe take some of the pressure of the public markets off the industry. I mean, because we do have like these, we're kind of tied to some of these long term timelines, like getting things approved by regulatory agencies and development timelines, and if it takes a little bit of the pressure off and lets the companies like really focus on some innovation, I mean, that would be the best take on where this could take us, hopefully.
I'm always amazed at how often Joe Mullings comes into my conversations, but he had a post today on LinkedIn talking about the IPO market and how the uncertainty created by the tariffs is certainly going to make it harder. Well, the fundamentals are there for companies to go public. The uncertainty created by tariffs and other macro issues are really going to make it that difficult. So to your point, Chris, this may be Hologic is already public, but for larger privately held companies, if their investors need exits, maybe private equity is going to be the way for them to find their way out of these venture investments. So we shall see. We'll continue
we
to
shall
track.
See.
What is number three, Chris Newmarker?
Number three is we have the FDA approved Abbott's Tendyne transcatheter mitral valve replacement system. So like a big regulatory win for Abbott. A really, really exciting approval because, I mean, like mitral valve replacement like in a transcatheter way has been this next big thing after TAVR. So it'll be really neat to see where things go from here.
And of course, Kayleen, I'm looking forward to, I hope we'll have an Abbott Talks podcast about that. Kayleen and I are co-hosting the Abbott Talks podcast now. So this would be certainly a fun topic to cover.
Yeah. Gimme.
There you go.
All right. All right. What's number two, Chris Newmarker?
Hey, number two. Well, we had good transcatheter news and now we have bad transcatheter news.
Womp womp.
Sorry. We had Boston Scientific announcing they were discontinuing sales around their Accurate TAVR systems. And, Accurate was actually had been their next bet to compete against Edwards and Life Sciences and Medtronic because, they discontinued their Lotus program about 5 years ago. So, definitely, another setback for Boston Scientific and trying to get into TAVR. But I'd also say at the same time, though, I mean, the analysts, pointed to, just how strong Boston Scientific's portfolio is overall, including, I mean, gosh, the big things top of mind is FARAPULSE and the pulse field ablation space. I mean, they're just really strong there. So, Watchman left LAA. devices as well, you know. So I mean, many other products. So I mean, you know, so can't win them all, I guess.
Yeah, no, and I think it's a sign of a, you know, a good company to sort of cut bait when you can and move on and pick your priorities. And this clearly right now is not an area where Boston Scientific is going to put a lot of its resources, at least into this product. So, but you're right. There's a lot of great success stories there as well. Well, Kayleen, do you want to invite his number one? I want to get.
Are we ready? Chris, take us to number one.
All right, here we go. It just was out today that Medtronic is actually upping their return to office policies. You know, so that's the largest company in our industry, and they've had hybrid, you know, workers coming in 3 days a week. Now they're upping it 4 days a week, and they're going to be starting this in September, and with a priority with a lot of locations here in the Twin Cities, including the operational headquarters in Fridley, Minnesota. So more Medtronic workers heading back to the office. So I mean, this has been a trend we've been. Trump accelerated things by telling the federal workers to come back to work, and now we've just seen corporations more and more, like in all different fields, telling the office workers it's time to come back. So kind of like that like at home, you know, work movement that like kept on going after the pandemic. It's definitely heading the other way now.
No, certainly a larger trend that we're seeing. And Chris, you know some of these people, right? You're there in the Twin Cities. You have some Medtronic folks in your circles?
I mean, yeah. I mean, I run into them all around town. So, I mean, yeah. I mean, I'm sure it isn't. I mean, you know, I mean, generally, we've been having a lot of employers around the Twin Cities, like telling people to, you know, get back to work, including the state. I mean, the state workers, and you know, I mean, our governor here, Tim Walz, was the Democratic vice presidential candidate. And he's telling them they've got to get back into the office, like at least half the time. And the state workers aren't happy, especially because I've understood from the state workers they have to pay for their parking, so they're very grumpy about it. If you really want to get somebody, you know, around the suburbs to start, like, you know, talking a lot, like, you know, like just ask them what they think about the return to work going on. But I mean, Medtronic made the point. I mean, they said that this, you know, they were saying that, you know, they really believe that, you know, in-person exchanges are invaluable to work, and that, you know, they, you know, and companies have really wrestled with how to try to make hybrid work, you know, policies happen. I mean, I've just heard anecdotal stories about people going into companies and even having Zoom meetings in the office. I mean, they're sitting at different desks in the same office doing a Zoom meeting because there are people who aren't in the office. And it's just like, you know, it has been really hard for companies to figure this all out.
That is a weird thing when you go into a Zoom meeting and there's two or three people in one room, and it actually makes it less efficient because they're all in the same room and they're all taking turns, or you can't hear them or you can't see them. So we need to find a good balance.
Like, oh, and now I feel like I'm out of what's going on because they're sitting in the conference room making little asides about stuff, and I'm, you know, you're sitting at home or whatever. I mean, that's not
prior to device select. I worked at a company where I was the only one remote. I was up in Massachusetts, and everyone else is Long Island, and we'd have these staff meetings, a lot of them. And at one point, they bought an owl, which was one of these cameras that kind of moves around. So I was like this little robot on a table that was like
certainly,
yeah, it was a little nuts, or other times I'd be in the big screen on the wall. So we've come a long way from those awkward out of office days. So,
and I have to say, it's fun. I mean, this B2B media space, I mean, we've had, you know, like, you know, like more like remote work for a much longer time. I mean, I got in this space, I started working at home in 2013. I mean, I was a pioneer, like, you know, I even had a few neighbors, you know, asking me if everything was okay, because they see me around the house occasionally, like just doing a quick chore or whatever. Like, you still have a job, Chris? Like, yeah, I work at home. It's great. You know, it's like I'm a huge fan of working at home. I mean, it's just a good deal. Best commute ever.
Yeah, I've been working from home for 15 years. So I think a lot of it is a personality style. And certain personalities really thrive in that environment. And my efficiency is unparalleled by working from home, to my own almost detriment. But what my concern is ultimately is you're losing talent. when you're not providing additional opportunities or flexibility, like maybe the key word here is flexibility, I would never consider an in-person role. And that's very limiting. I could see Tom shaking his head. Noted. Kaylin, you can work from home forever. Okay, great. Thank you. But I like to have that freedom and that flexibility. And I like to build my time that in a way that makes me the most efficient. So I can see why there's, you know, some grumpy people to your words, Chris. I would be a pretty grumpy person myself.
Yeah, absolutely. And I agree 100%. I remember at that same company, I would go down once a month and be in the office. And by like 11 o'clock in the morning, I was out of my mind because everyone's talking about their weekends and their dogs and this. And I'm just trying to work here. I already said good morning.
Right, yeah.
Like, I don't need to do it. And I'm a friendly guy, but like, I'm working here. Like, I don't have time for the chit chat. So 100% agree with you.
Pre-work from home. The bane of my existence, and I'm going to sound awful by admitting this, but we're among friends, and it's just us and hundreds of thousands of other people.
Right,
the bane of my existence when I was working in an office, I had an office, and it was constantly the door would open so I could see cat videos and hear about how, like, to your point, the weekend was, and to talk about the weather and like, hey, I'm going to like run next door and like grab a cup of coffee you want. And I'm like, no, I just want to finish building my spreadsheet. Like, I just need the spreadsheet done. I don't care about the cat video. Now, off hours, give me all the cat videos. Anytime. But I just shudder.
Oh, well. Well, I hope folks can spend some time out of the office on June 11th. How was that? For Device Talks Minnesota.
There you go.
At the that's pretty good. At the McNamara Alumni Center.
If you're still yearning to get out of the office, that's dark. If you need more Medtronic people.
Anyone who wants to get out of their home office, Chris, admit it, Chris. I like conferences a lot more that's now when I'm at home because I'm like that whole day. I'm like, I'm here amongst people. This is great. Like, I get to see people and talk with people. And then I know I get to scurry home and deep process or deprogram when I get home.
Well, I would say, even though I work at home, I mean, I like to get out and I'm going to a coffee meeting first thing next week. I mean, it's good to get out and like meet with people and not be just like, you know, stuck in the home office. Like, you know, like
it makes those interactions special, makes those interactions have more importance, more gravitas to them.
Well said.
There's just someone talking about cat videos around the water cooler.
Preach.
All right. Well, I hope folks will spend some time with us on June 11th at Device Talks Minnesota. The MedTech Nerd Tour continues. And I was going to say it would be our ultimate destination would be Device Talks Minnesota. But once again, we'll be going to the Twins game. That'll be the ultimate end to the MedTech Nerd Tour. So I hope folks will go to minnesota.devicetalks.com to register. Once again, make sure you register by the end of next week. By Friday, what would that be? That would be the anybody? Bueller? None of us have a calendar open.
Next Friday is the 6th, June 6th.
Trying to register by June 6th if we still have tickets because we're selling out. So don't wait. All right, before we begin our conversation with Cecilia Soriano, Global President of Infusion Therapies and Technologies at Baxter, let's hear from our sponsor, Aptix.
Dave Appleton, Senior Vice President, Global Quality and Regulatory at Aptix. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Kayleen. Glad to be here.
I know the Device Talks family knows how much we love Aptix, but for those who don't know who Aptix is, can you share more information about Aptix?
I'd love to. Aptix brings together the aptitude and excellence of more than a dozen companies with a 70-year plus track record in manufacturing. While our name may be new, our history of helping customers solve complex challenges with confidence is not. We're very proud of our legacy of entrepreneurship and make it happen mindset, which is our motto. We pair a collaborative approach with deep expertise and specialized capabilities, including but not limited to molding, extrusion, coating solutions, and assembly. We have a global network of 15 locations located in China, Mexico, Canada, and the United States, and growing. Across our network, we support from design and development to manufacturing at scale. With our range of capabilities and geographies, We have the flexibility and depth to support our customers where and how they need it.
We're going to take a quick break from my conversation with this episode's sponsor, Aptix, to bring you our interview with Cecilia Soriano, Global President of Infusion Therapies and Technologies at Baxter International. But if you can't wait to learn more about Aptix, please visit their website right now at aptix.com, APTYX.com. And now, Cecilia Soriano.
All right, now we're going to play the keynote interview I did at Device Docs Boston. Quick note, we'll reference a video that was played at the presentation. It's only a couple of minutes long. I cut out that part of the audio, but if you want to check out the video, go to the show notes. I'll put the link to the YouTube link that has the video there. All right, now enjoy this conversation.
All right, everybody, thanks for joining us for this, I think, important conversation. We've touched upon MedTech's reaction response to external pressures a lot over the last 2 days, and nothing applies more pressure than, I think, climate and hurricanes and forces of nature. And you may recall back in October, Baxter was hit hard by Hurricane Helene. I think it's something we've probably all felt, whether we know it or not. I know I had my wife went for a procedure that was very minor, but normally they do an IV, and she was told, no, we're just going to give you Gatorade, because we, and she wondered why, and I assumed it was because they're still recovering and getting the bags they need. So I think it's important to note that a lot of people like me didn't notice. And I think that speaks to the ability of MedTech to really respond and to react and to do everything that needs to be done to get things up and running again and to make sure patients get the care that they need. So I'm very pleased to be talking with one of the people, one of the principal architects of that response plan, both the architects and the, I guess, the constructor and the executor on of the plan, Cecilia Soriano, President of Infusion Therapies and Technologies at Baxter. Cecilia, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
It's great to unpack this really unfortunate journey that you had last year, but let's talk about your personal journey first.
Okay.
How'd you find your way into our beloved medtech industry?
In a little bit of a convoluted way, let me put it this way. I'm very close to my grandfather. He was a doctor, so always been very interested in healthcare. But I loved business, so I actually started in business, studied business in Argentina, and worked at Citibank in finance. Was not my thing, then moved over to Coca-Cola, loved the creativity of that in my early 20s. But after I got my MBA, I was hired by J&J, thinking that they, I would be working on, baby powder or something like that. And they put me to work on schizophrenia. So I went from sugar water to bipolar disorder, Alzheimer's, and schizophrenia. So that's how the whole journey started. And honestly, it was much more intellectually stimulating maybe than what I was doing before. And it's been, 28 years, almost 29 since. I stayed at J&J for about 17 years, both on the pharma side and the medical device side. And then one of my mentors that I had at J&J moved over to BD, Becton Dickinson, and brought me along. So I worked there for 8 years. And in 2023, I moved over to Baxter.
What's been your sort of core strategy for finding new opportunities? And this isn't on my question list, but for evaluating new opportunities, for knowing when it's time to take that next step?
It's all about learning new things. I've taken steps down, laterals, just to get an experience. And I definitely knew coming into Baxter, going through major changes at Baxter, and that's what attracted me, in the sense of being able to participate in that and that change, right?
Amazing. Now, and you're right. That's, I think, where you see the progress and the rewards and the results of your efforts. So we're here today to share, as I alluded to earlier, the recovery story for your North Cove manufacturing plant. I know you brought a video, and we can get that queued up as I continue to talk. There we are. All right, that was faster than I thought. That will sort of set the stage, and then we'll unpack the response and some of the lessons learned from that. So,
well, actually, before you go with the video, can I set it up just to?
Oh, please, hold on a second. We need a little more color. Back to you, Cecilia.
Yeah, no, just to provide a little bit more context, you know, if any one of you, and you mentioned your wife, I think you said, anybody who's ever had a procedure, you know, surgery, whatever, you've probably had an IV, probably saline. So that's the product that we're talking about. Very commonly used, you know, this plant where you're going to see where the hurricane hit, it is not a hurricane-prone area at all. It's nestled within, you know, the mountains in North Carolina, close to Asheville, if you've seen any, you know, pictures post-hurricane in Asheville. We've been there 50 years. We've never had anything remotely similar to this. But it's a huge plant. So we manufacture 1 million units per day at this plant.
Wow.
And we have 2,500 employees there. So from, it's our largest manufacturing plant. It's the largest manufacturing plant in the U.S. across the board. So just the magnitude and the size and the scale is pretty big, but in an area, like I said, where this never happens.
Well, that's startling, especially the internal shots, the cameras inside. So that gives us the great visual. You kind of gave us a little color to start, but let's get a little more personal detail. How closely were you tracking the storm? When did you realize that this was going to be something that you had never experienced before?
Yeah, I mean, we track all storms are major, you know, we have a hurricane preparedness plan. We have risk mitigation plans across all our plants, no matter where they sit. Again, this was not an area where we get hurricanes, but we were tracking the storm. It was coming, if people remember, coming up from Florida. And so proactively, we did, you know, dismiss all our employees. So everybody evacuated, the 2,500, and there was a kind of skeleton crew that was remaining on site. We kept getting updates on a, you know, hourly basis until that Friday night when it's like, this is much bigger. And the reason why you see the first shot there, the plant is located, it's surrounded by a river.
Mm-hmm.
And that river has a levee to prevent, you know, overflow. And there was a complete levee breach, like the levee broke, like the song, the levee broke. And all of that mud, all of that water permeated into the site. So that was the the major, you know, difference versus what we were tracking. And all of a sudden we went from, we're doing okay, we might, you know, be down one day of production to, oh my gosh, the entire plant is shut down. And just from a more personal perspective, this happened, you know, Friday night. I was there on Monday morning. And just driving to the site, if you've seen, you know, pictures or videos on TV, basically, the devastation in that area was just incredible. There were like literally houses flowing, you know, down the river. There were cars in places that there shouldn't be, you know, it was just horrible. So that whole community, our bridges were down also. So the site can only be accessed by the bridges that we had. They were completely down. So we had to walk on a sliver of a part of the bridge that was still remaining to even get to the site, like not in a car walk.
I hate bridges. I would not.
Yeah. And then entering the site, we were boots up to here. There was obviously no power, no water, no nothing. It was so eerie. It was like a horror nightmare movie. We're in there with little flashlights, completely pitch dark around us, walking through a foot of mud plus 2 to 3 feet of water. The entire plant, we were just like looking at each other like, this is not real, this is not happening. So could we have predicted? There's no way we could have predicted what actually happened. But in hindsight, honestly, making sure that everybody evacuated beforehand, that was just preemptively, because at that time, you know, it wasn't necessary.
So what are those first steps that you do? What are the first things you do to assess the situation?
So number one is our people, yeah. Right? We had to account for, because the entire community was devastated, right? So 2,500 people that we had to account for. There was no phones.
People were probably in shock, I have to imagine. Because you're saying, I live in New England, and if this happened, it's not supposed to happen here either. And if it happened here.
Absolutely, and people lost their homes, right? Their cars, they had no way to communicate. So it took us a couple of weeks, honestly, to account. And we did account for every single one of our employees. But also setting up an employee assistance center, with, you know, food, water, generators were a very hot commodity, internet service, banking, you know, Activate. We have a Baxter Relief Fund for employees in situations like this. So number one priority was definitely our patients, our people. Mm-hmm. And then obviously the plant, and then getting supply back in and we can talk a little bit more about
that. Did you have a crisis management that you had in place that you were able to access, or was there a lot of improvisation here?
We have for every single one of our plants, and we learned a lot also through, you know, Hurricane Helene that happened a few years back. The situation was different, though the extent of the damage and how quickly and unexpectedly it came in. But very, very quickly set up a governance. And it was more just, what do we prioritize? Like, what are the 1, 2, 3s? And again, it was the people, get the plant back up, and supply. Because these are critical. We represent about 60% of the market for saline, you know, IVs in the U.S. So the impact was huge. And it's not just the plant. We also have a warehouse of product, you know, where we store product, which we were able to move to higher ground before the hurricane. But we couldn't get it out because we didn't have bridges to move the product. So
when did you begin communicating with customers and suppliers?
Immediately.
And how does that work?
So even as soon as that weekend, we sent a press release out and posted on our website, et cetera, had calls with customers. So in general, throughout this whole process, it was communicate as soon as possible, authentically, you know, making sure that we very transparently and often. So we had biweekly updates on our website. We had customer letters that went out on a routine basis, daily calls with multiple stakeholders, not only customers, but government agencies, different industry, you know, forums, you know, that would reach out, even patients, honestly, that reached out to us. So that was number, I think, a key enabler of all this, communication. Communicate often, early, and transparently was key.
And what was the response that you were getting? I mean, I have some more questions here, but I'm just curious, what do folks say when you're calling? I mean, everyone's aware of it, so they know.
Everyone's aware. I was on TV, right? But everyone's aware until it hits, you know, their need, and they're out of an IV bag. They need an IV bag. So, I mean, customers in general were very understanding, but at the same time, you know, they have procedures and surgeries that they have to. It was also last quarter of the year, where, you know, surgical procedures are, you know, at its highest. So at least not mandatory procedures are at its highest. So it was a tough moment also of the year for this to happen. Not that there's ever a good time for
sure.
This. But they were very understanding, but also, you know, they needed to focus on patient care, of course. So
how do you go about assuring the supply? What was the process for that? To ensure that you were getting the bags you needed, that your customers were being taken care of, and the patients were as well.
So number one, obviously, is getting those bridges back up, and we were on a list of many other bridges that needed to be built in that area. So we built our own bridge, literally a temporary bridge to get the product that we had in containers out, because there was a lot of product available to be used, but we just couldn't get it out. Mm-hmm. So we did that. There's about 90 trucks per day that, you know, pick up product from that site every day. So we got that out. And then just assessing the damage. You know, within 24 hours, we had people on site assessing the damage, but we needed the bridge also to get people. We had 2,000 people at one point working to clean up this plant. You know, just getting through that. And honestly, within less than 4 weeks, we had our first line back up and running and product coming out the door. It was nothing short of amazing, to be honest, when you see what it looked like versus, well, what it looks like now, it's impeccable. The site is impeccable right now.
I believe it. Now, looking at the video there, I mean, what sort of cleanup was required? I can't imagine the cleanup that was required. And to get things going in a month, I mean, One of the lines in a month.
And that was it. But also in the meantime, so one of the great things about Baxter is we have, you know, plants all over the world. Mm-hmm. So our supply chain resiliency, we activated 9 different plants globally where we imported product from. So we were importing product from all over the world in order to ensure that we had supply in the U.S. And that implied, you know, working with local governments in other countries to ensure that they would allow us even to export, you know, product to the U.S. because there's also need in their local market. So it was activating the plant and also in parallel working on supply, importing product, and then getting supply through the channel. Because we we broke the supply chain channel, if you think about it. Many of our products, we have a lot of customers that buy direct from our site. That was closed down. We weren't shipping anything direct to customers. Mm-hmm. So the distribution channel all of a sudden had all the product that used to come direct from our North Cove site, the traditional product that goes through distribution, and all these imports. And so it was also a lot of learnings in how the whole supply chain works. Mm-hmm. When it's not broken, and when there's, you know, you can't tell, but when you put so much pressure on it, you can see where some of the gaps are and areas to improve.
So it sounds like it was almost a COVID-like sort of situation where that
it was. Revealed the problem was only us.
Yeah, right.
We're going to take a really quick pause on our conversation with Cecilia Soriano, Global President of Infusion Therapies and Technologies at Baxter International, to bring you back to my conversation with Dave Appleton of Aptix. So Dave, how important is it to you to deliver exceptional customer service and the highest quality product?
As the global leader of quality, of course, this is extremely important and is a tremendous passion of mine. Next to safety, quality is by all means our top priority. Product quality, of course, is very, very critical, but areas such as on-time delivery and continuity of supply are part of quality and are also standard KPIs throughout our business. We're on a journey here to deliver operational excellence. A favorite statement of mine, and one that people may be getting tired of hearing, but I live this every day, is you can't control what you don't measure, and you can't improve what you don't control, which are underlying measures for Kaizen and continuous improvement.
Ooh, I love that. So what are some examples that illustrate how Aptix is living this?
Well, one very, very significant example to elevate our performance is we've created Aptix University that's based out of our Trenton, Ontario facility, but is globalized across all of Aptix, where we have a focus on building Lean and Six Sigma processes into our culture. And very proud to share and even brag on our class count since we began last year. We have over 55 yellow belts that have been trained, over 30 green belts trained and many of them certified, and over 20 black belts either trained or in progress towards their certification, and over 30 team members who have been trained in design of experiments and 8D problem-solving tools. And what's important about the program at Aptix University is that this is more than a theoretical approach. To achieve green or black belt certifications, our candidates have to execute a project that's significant to business and also very, very meaningful to our customers.
I love the focus on learning and building shared processes across the company. Do you have any other initiatives like this?
We do. To support both consistency and flexibility, we aim to have the same injection molding and extrusion equipment across many of our Aptix facilities. And this extends to our quality lab as well. I'm very excited about the newest piece of equipment we have on order and should be arriving and installed in the next few weeks. It's a CT or computed tomography scanner. It's truly state of the art and will not only support precision and quality, but also throughput in our metrology lab, which is extremely important for efficient validations.
Well, first of all, congratulations. Second, so you said CT scanner. Is that the same equipment that's used on people? It used to be called a CAT scan?
Yes, it has been called a CAT scan, and it is the same technology. And in the way that it could see inside of a person's brain or other anatomical features, this piece of equipment will measure parts without harm, very, very similar to the technology used in hospitals. It scans both internal and external areas in a non-destructive manner for any parts that we manufacture and can identify tiny defects that are otherwise very difficult to catch and generates detailed three-dimensional prints. The CAT scanner, the CT scanner, is the gold standard for dimensional metrology, which streamlines validations as well as ongoing quality control and will support all of the Aptix network, reinforcing our goal once again of consistency and flexibility. But ultimately, why this really matters is that a microscopic defect in our components or our assembly could mean the device doesn't deliver medication properly, or it could potentially contribute to patient injury. I think we can all agree that product safety and efficacy is of utmost importance.
Dave Appleton, Senior Vice President of Global Quality and Regulatory for Aptix, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. I learned so much from you.
Kayleen, thanks for having me. I appreciate the time with you together.
We cannot thank our episode sponsor, Aptix, enough for supporting this episode of Device Talks Weekly and for supporting Device Talks. So thank you, thank you, thank you. And for those in the audience who are looking forward to working with Aptix, please visit their website at aptyx.com. Remember that Aptix brings together the aptitude and excellence of more than a dozen companies with a 70-year-plus track record in manufacturing. And now for the conclusion of our conversation with Cecilia Soriano of Baxter International.
Yeah. So I want to sort of unpack what your next steps were, but let's talk a bit about ensuring your employees were safe.
How
was that done? How willing and able were people to get back to work on that first line within a month? I mean, again, I'm sure their lives were completely were similar. Something similar happened to them at home. They lost their place of work and
absolutely.
Their homes.
Absolutely. Even that morning that I told you we were there, you know, 2 days later, we had employees showing up at the plant. How can I help? How can we help clean this up? There were families that had lost loved ones, and they were there at the plant trying to, you know, to help. So it was we accounted. It was hard. The first, you know, hundreds, sure, we reached them. But then there were people. This is an area with mountains, and many people live, you know, up the mountain. And we had to get... you know, ATV.
Yep.
To go up and check on some people. We had everybody's address, but it took a while because, again, there was no cell reception. Mm-hmm. There was no gas to drive your car. So it took us almost a month to account for every single person. And every single day we had a tracker on how many employees we were able to contact and identify and confirm that they were okay.
And again, is this a plan that was in place to do, or were you... Did you have a fleet of ATVs at the wait?
I mean, we
obviously not, but...
No, we didn't, but we did what we needed to do. So, again, it's part of our hurricane preparedness plan overall, but it was just the magnitude of this was so much larger than what we had experienced ever.
And talk a bit more about what were some of the assistance you were able to provide the employees. I know you mentioned some funds and things like that.
Yeah, so... just literally a mile from a site, we set up an employee assistance area, if you will. And we had so many donations from even just the local community, because our plant and our employees are the local community, right? There's generations and generations of people that have worked at that plant at Baxter. And we provided all sorts of resources for them to ensure that they were okay. And as I mentioned, you know, generators or even financial assistance or access to a computer with internet, laundry services, toiletries, food, water, et cetera.
It's amazing. So talk a bit more about how did you go from one line to two lines? You're fully functioning. You're fully
we are
up operational now. What was that process like?
Yeah, so as of February... so less than 5 months after this happened, the plant is fully back up, full capacity. So all the estimates would have said 6 to 9 months minimum to get this plant even to start up. And we were completely back up and running 100% by February. We're catching up, though, because as you can imagine, after several months of not having that 1 million unit per day flow into the market, there's still a catch-up to do with respect to filling the supply chain, basically.
And how did the rest of the medtech industry sort of respond? Did you engage other medtech companies, suppliers, smaller providers of materials and things that you're partners with?
We definitely engaged partners that, as it relates to, remember, we had to fix a lot of our equipment, and so multiple suppliers of components that we have in order to deliver on the product and to manufacture our product. We went through the local government agencies with respect to engage. They would engage with other suppliers of IV bags to make sure to see what they could supply on our behalf, since it was such a lack of supply in the market. We worked very closely with the FDA, with ASPR, with multiple government agencies that were very, very instrumental, honestly, in the recovery of the plant, even in helping us then finally get a permanent bridge and the imports, right? We had a lot of product that we were, bags that we were flying, bags of water flying over water that we needed to get into the U.S. And so planes, we had 200 planes by the end of the year that have flown into the U.S. with water, with bags of water, basically.
Talk a bit about the bridge again. So how did you get a bridge up in that short time, and what are your bridges today? Do you have, you mentioned a permanent bridge? How many bridges do you have?
So we had two bridges, they were both down, and now we have three, basically. So we, the core of engineers finally built a permanent bridge. Mm-hmm. In the meantime, for a few months, actually, we were just running on a bridge we built from rocks, et cetera. Locally.
That's amazing.
So our engineers, basically, with, you know, obviously with the oversight of local authorities, but we built a bridge.
Are you going to keep three bridges to have a spare?
We did.
Never hurts to have an extra bridge. So once again, where do things sort of stand today in terms of you're fully operational at the plant?
Yes.
How are you sort of helping that bolus of demand kind of work through so you're supplying everybody who needs to be supplied now, or are you at that point already?
For our core products, we've been in full supply for a while now. There's a long tail. We have a very thorough portfolio of products. So there's certain products that all get made on a certain line, and they're just very, the onesie twosies that are left, you know, the very small volume. And so we're actually, when all this happened, our product were put on allocation. The only thing that means is we're kind of limiting how much they can get to ensure that everybody gets their fair share. And so we've, as of actually today, I think, we're removing all allocations on all our products. So it's, like I said, the plant has been manufacturing the volumes that we were manufacturing before as of February. So very, very quickly.
And how does the plant of today compare to the plant of...
That's what I said. It's literally impeccable. Like, I've never seen a plant. They were, and I'm not kidding, like, cleaning it, first fixing everything, but then cleaning it with, like, literally toothbrushes. Like, the level, unmantled everything, assembled everything, everything clean. It is impeccable.
So the equipment is the same equipment?
Some of it had to be replaced.
Yep.
But other than they were able to fix. Because one of the... in hindsight, remember I told you that skeleton crew that stayed back? They had the foresight, I should say, even before the hurricane actually hit. They shut down proactively each one of their lines just in case. So if there was a power surge the machines themselves, the equipment was fine, they just needed to be cleaned. In some cases, we had to replace some parts, but if they would have still been powered, it would have been a very different story.
So what lessons did you learn from this? Not that you necessarily, I guess the question is, what did you learn? These aren't lessons, I suppose, that you should have known, but what are you doing differently today than you did? And to the point of the COVID comparison, what inefficiencies or improvements did this experience reveal to you?
I think definitely one is supply resiliency. We talk about that a lot. One thing is resiliency, and another thing is complete redundancy, meaning we're not replacing, this was a huge plant, and we have a lot of other plants which we activated, and so our plan met its purpose, but the volumes are so big that there's no plant in the world, or plants in the world, none of our competitors either, could fill that gap. And so more and more focusing on ensuring that we streamline our portfolio, that we have products that are approved by the FDA, multiple plants around the world. And again, just have these mitigation plans in place that we, we're able to get back up so quickly. So the supply chain redundancy is critical. And I'm so thankful that Baxter has a strong focus on that. We have the largest breadth of plants to support IV solutions in the world. And we're very much about manufacturing where we sell. So our plant, it was in the U.S. This happened in the U.S. because that's where we sell and that's where we manufacture. But we have access to the rest of the plants globally to mitigate, you know, situations like this. So the supply chain resiliency and redundancy, which I think, you know, obviously came forth in COVID, mm-hmm. very much so as well. But also with these types of products, right? Everybody like, oh, an IV bag. Do you know that we pay more for this than we do in an IV bag?
Really? It's kind of like internet. Like when your Wi-Fi goes down, suddenly your world is rocked. It's just something that's there.
Yeah, you take
like,
for granted.
Yeah, you're like, I don't
something
have Wi-Fi
anymore.
Something
you take for granted, and, yeah.
And so what is it like producing a product that everyone needs but no one really thinks about?
And I think silver lining out of all this, there were a lot of ahas with respect to the role that this product line plays in healthcare. Who would have thought that an IV bag could shut down procedures in multiple hospitals? You know, not having that product available can absolutely shut down a whole healthcare system. So I think there's, and that's, you know, some of the conversations we're also having with, you know, government officials. We used to have a stockpile. The government used to have a stockpile of IV solutions across the industry pre-COVID, and somehow, you know, it kind of fell by the wayside. So we're also, you know, in discussions to get that back. And I think there was just a lot of realization through this unfortunate experience of the need for this.
Did we work through that stockpile because during COVID we were unable to maintain supply, or was there a increased demand, or?
To be honest, I don't know what the reason is, because okay. There used to be one and there wasn't when this happened. Where's the stockpile? Oh, there is no stockpile.
That would seem to be something good to stockpile.
Yeah.
So speaking about the broader medical device industry, we're facing a lot of external uncertainty, changes at the FDA, tariffs on and off.
Tariff? What's a tariff?
The larger, broader economic uncertainty. How do you view the bigger picture at the moment? Like, the tariffs that were a shock to, I think, to everybody. I think Ivan Tornos was here yesterday, and he had compared it to COVID.
Yeah.
Because it just was something that, okay, we don't know exactly how we're going to work through it, but we'll work through it. How did the experience with Hurricane Helene sort of maybe prepare you and give you maybe a broader perspective to handle questions like the one we're facing today?
I mean, if you think about our industry, it's an extremely dynamic industry and change is the norm. So throw whatever at us, med device industry, we've been through it and we're going to continue, you know, be it COVID, tariffs, hurricanes. To me, it's more about that building that resiliency that I was talking about and embracing change as opposed to managing change as a general concept, right? So have we been doing a million different scenarios on tariffs? Yes, like everybody else, and mitigations. But no matter what the problem, the essence is the same. It's how you manage, not just how you manage, but how you embrace change. And because there's always opportunities when, just as a general attitude. And it is super important to prioritize and what's most important. You know, for Baxter, our mission is to sustain lives, right? And that's always front and center. Our patients are always front and center. So as long as whatever your mission is, whatever your values are, if you keep that front and center, that's your guiding light, and ruthlessly prioritize. You know, when for the hurricane example, what are the three things? There's only three things we can do at a time. Even if we activate the entire organization, we can't do everything. What's most important? People, getting the plant up, and supply to our customers and our patients. I could put the same, you know, we put the same lens to tariffs, put the same lens to whatever gets thrown our way. You know, a year ago, or even here in some of the sessions here, you know, AI and connected care, and there's so much change happening to us. But instead of letting it happen, is how do we embrace it and do something about it? I don't think it's any different, is my point. And I think this industry is extremely resilient.
Final question. I think it becomes difficult in our everyday lives to build in time for resiliency, to take that extra 5 minutes to do something you know you should do, but you're going to sacrifice it because you need to do what's in front of you. How do you impart a need for resiliency when you're functioning day to day? Because like, there's always pressures on costs and price and earnings and shareholders and this and that and the other thing, and someone has to say stop, wait, like we need to do a little more. Like, we're not going to get the benefit now, but trust me, we'll need it later. How do you, and I'm not sure if you're the champion of that philosophy or not, But how does that stay front and center in a culture and in a company?
I am an absolute advocate of that because we can't do all things at all times. And we tend to pile on. It's easier to pile on versus make tough decisions and prioritize. I think prioritization is one of the toughest things we can do as leaders for our teams, right? Workload-wise, et cetera. And there are trade-offs. So as long as you prioritize, you fully understand what the trade-offs and the consequences on are and make the right decisions, it's pretty intuitive, but it's hard to make those calls. And you have to know what to prioritize and why. And that's where, again, if you're anchored on who, what your mission is, what your values are, what's important to you as a company, it should be pretty clear. And again, for us, is patience. Patient supply, patient, you know, safety, patient, that's number one. Anything else falls by the wayside. And that's how it's just ruthlessly, you know, prioritizing. It's not easy. Not for the faint of heart.
No, it's not. And I'm going back to COVID, where we supposedly learned all these lessons about
supply. But we did. I think we did.
Okay.
And
I'm not saying bachelor specifically, but just our broader economic. I feel like there's, do you feel like that we've got redundancies and bigger supplies than we did back then? Or is there enough toilet paper for everybody now, more than there used to be? Do you feel that some of those lessons remain?
I mean, I'll just speak on from
Baxter. For you and for Baxter,
For sure. So again, two pivot points for us were COVID and then Hurricane Maria, which hit Puerto Rico, where we have two plants.
Yep.
And we changed our whole manufacturing network, if you will. We've been on a path to manufacture where we sell. We've been on a path to drive supply redundancy, having second, third tier suppliers as backups, it's been a whole program, actually, at Baxter where we've tried to learn. It takes time. It doesn't change on a dime.
Mm-hmm.
So there's plenty more to do, trust me. And even in the hurricane, it wasn't just about the plants and the supply. What came to light was more that the entire supply chain, you know, how we're, as consumers, you know, you go on your Amazon and you can track your package everywhere. You can almost track it exactly where it is. Not exactly in our industry and how things work. You know, we lose sight of our products in certain moments of that journey that it's on until it gets literally to the patient. Because even within the hospital, sometimes we lose track. So there's a lot of opportunities. We've learned, even after Hurricane Helene, we implemented a couple of, I'll call them processes and tools that would allow for better planning, inventory management, and manufacturing. So there's a better connection between what's happening in the field, let's say, and what products we need to manufacture, as well as better visibility from a supply chain perspective. But when we put all this pressure through this hurricane on that process, we were still able to identify, you know, key areas of opportunity. They put them that way. But I feel Baxter has been very focused on this. And we have a huge manufacturing network anyway to begin with. So it's a very strong focus for us as an organization.
That's great. And do you go through your day sort of maybe looking at things, looking at finding better ways to do things, or at least envisioning better ways to do things as a matter of day-to-day course, a matter of work, as opposed to, as we all do, I think, wait for that crisis to force us to find that innovation?
I'd like to say that, sure, we do this every day. you know, like any crisis, we've gotten really good at Baxter dealing with crisis, unfortunately, but it's how do you keep that spark going and those learnings, you know, going. This one, for sure, was really, really big. And because COVID, I feel we all lived through COVID together.
Yep.
Right, as a society.
Point. This is your own private...
This was our own private nightmare.
Yeah.
So it's very persistent. We have a lot of lessons learned in many areas. We're still discussing. It's very fresh for us right now. It just happened last quarter, if you think about it, or the end of last year. And it just had a major impact on the organization and how we look at things. So, and honestly, by the way, it didn't just hit the U.S. This was an impact globally for our businesses because all those, you know, nine plants that we ship product from, that impact local markets globally. So in Europe, in China, we actually closed down our supply. We exited the market to supply here. So working with local governments in those areas, et cetera. So it impacted our entire organization. It wasn't just a U.S. thing for us.
Oh, interesting.
And so a lot of lessons learned that I'm sure will continue for a long time. But yeah, it's easy to forget, right, in the day-to-day.
Well, hopefully,
human nature.
Hopefully we won't get a jarring reminder anytime soon.
We'll certainly keep getting things, right? It doesn't matter what it is. You name it, change the name, but, you know, like I said, change is inevitable.
That's a great point. We'll end with that. Cecilia, thank you for sharing your story today.
Thank you. Great. Thanks for having me.
Well, that is a wrap. Thanks so much for joining us on this episode of the Device Talks weekly podcast. I hope you'll join us at Device Talks Minnesota on June 11th. Once again, go to minnesota.devicetalks.com to register. Use the code DTWeekly25 to save 25% off the price of registration. And it'd be great to see you there. Really looking forward to having some fantastic medtech conversations in the Twin Cities. Please do subscribe to the Device Talks podcast network. It's the best way to get future episodes of our great podcast, including our recently launched Olympus Talks podcast. We just launched episode 2 of Olympus Talks this week, and looking forward to bringing you many of those, as well as our other great podcasts. We'll have Abbott Talks, and we'll have our Ortho Innovation Talks, and many, many more. So make sure you're subscribed to the Device Talks podcast network, and do us all a favor. Would you please follow Device Talks on LinkedIn? Share this podcast on LinkedIn. Please connect with me. I am Tom Salemi, editorial director of Device Talks. Connect with Kayleen Brown, our managing editor, and connect with Chris Newmarker, editor of Mass Device. We'd love to be part of your future med tech conversations. All right, folks, thanks again for listening, and really, really hope you'll join us at Device Talks Minnesota.